KYMN Radio. Pleased as heck to be joined now by our friend, the Northfield City Administrator, Mr. Ben Martin. Good morning, Ben. How you doing?
Good morning. So, great.
You got here right before the snow started flying. I think. I mean, you survived, or you made it before the disaster.
Yeah, I had to get myself in a mindset like, okay, drive slow. The roads might be a little slick out there. This is the first experience, so I made it safely here. So
there it is. Yeah. Important safety tip from the lips of the city administrator. Drive careful out there, folks.
Yeah, there you go.
So there was a council work session last night. Work sessions, you don't ever make any official decisions, but those conversations are always healthy and productive. So last night, I feel like one of the first, when I started 4 years ago as the news director, one of the first stories I covered was starting to put the process of a flood study together. And 4 years later, we're still discussing flood emergency and flood mitigation. But it does sound like the city's coming to some sort of a better idea of what needs to happen.
Yeah, we figured with the snow about to fly, it'd be a good time to talk about flooding in the river. Hey. Fortunately, we haven't had flooding in the winter time, which I worked in the city of Anoka on a redevelopment, and that redevelopment was driven by an ice dam in the winter time and flooding that homes were flooded in the middle of winter. And there's challenges everywhere. Unfortunately, we haven't had that. But last night, the reason we were talking about it was we've applied for, following that flood in the national or the disaster declaration that was made, that opens the city up to potential grant funding with it as well. And so the council did authorize us to be able to apply for some. So we gave them an update on the ones that we submitted some requests for some funding on for that. Because again, fortunately, this last event, we've had four major flooding events dating back to 2010, when that was kind of the shocker, first kind of big shocker for the city, where the fire station was in danger of getting flooded. The businesses were really in trouble, and the community was really unprepared. Since that time, fortunately, the fire station's been improved, and we did flood proofing, raised some of the dike over there for that project. We've raised two electrical transformers, and fortunately, with those investments, this last year was actually a larger event than the 2010 event, but it was fairly quiet. Mm-hmm. We were getting close to getting at a level that would have put us into a new territory related to some extra protections, like at the wastewater plant and things, but fortunately it didn't go there. But we want to learn from history to say, what can we do better and what can we do to prepare? And there's a few things we're doing. One is we're trying to also focus on private property protection and trying to partner with our businesses. So we're applying for improvements to the West Bank flood wall improvement. So we've been looking at a study to say, what can we do on the west side of the river to protect some of those businesses? Because the flooding does go up and there's a lot of sandbagging that has to be done. We've partnered with Carleton on their stadium protection, where they were doing some matches on this grant that if we get it, they'll be able to do some more permanent improvements. They do temporary gates to protect the facility and things. And then additionally, what we're looking at doing is getting an additional diesel pump generator, so that, you know, like when we worked with Carlson Capital Management, we brought in through the federal declaration that helped us, we brought in some state resources with an extra pump to help keep their pumps going, because they were just around the clock trying to keep the water out and using their own pumps that were kind of getting burned out. So that really helped us. But we thought it might be nice for us to have an extra one to be able to help people out, and we can always use those. The other one we're looking at is a sandbag machine that could maybe speed up some of the sandbag management, where if we have a big payloader truck, we can bring the sand in, dump it into this big hopper, pop out a bunch of sandbags to help too. So again, we're exploring grants for that. Be great if we could get it. If we don't get them, some of these things we're going to continue to pursue. Sandbag machines might be more affordable in the future for us just to do on our own, but the west flood wall and things is going to be fairly costly, so we're going to be cautious with that. And you know, we want to be responsible with our taxpayer dollars and be careful and explore all kinds of grants we can get. So that was a big piece of last night's meeting, just giving an update on that.
A sandbag machine, it sounds like a great idea. It's not something I've ever heard of, but I have to tell you, in my mind, I have this this vision of, like, you remember Dr. Seuss and the Sneetches?
Yeah.
I have this the machine, you go in, you get a star on your belly, or you get the star taken off your belly. I mean, obviously, it's not that silly, but
kind of like a Rube Goldberg machine.
Exactly. There you go, right? Yeah. But, okay, so Is that stuff to work into the 2026 budget then? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, if we get the grants, I think they could come next year. I don't know if it happened before springtime.
Yeah,
cross our fingers.
Right.
Let's hope we don't have flooding issues again, but we could. Otherwise, we aren't going to put anything in this upcoming budget. We'll wait and see if we get the grants, but I think that will be a conversation next year's budget early. If we end up not getting it, that we might look at doing that, or keeping that in mind. But and certainly the private folks have been very creative. They've taken like traffic cones, cut out the top part, turned them upside down, and kind of created their own kind of quicker way to fill the sandbags. It worked pretty well.
You take a ladder and a couple of sawhorses, and you put bags in between all the rungs and dump sand that way.
We just can't, you know, with climate change happening, like, that's why we're seeing more of these flooding events, right? We're seeing more extreme rains.
Agreed.
We're seeing like periods where you have heavy rains and then all of a sudden periods of drought, right? And these are all things that we're experiencing because of that. So we can't completely look back on history to predict what's going to happen in the future. So even though we maybe haven't had the need for a larger sandbagging operation to get it out quicker here, we want to be ready rather than looking back and going, why didn't we look at investing in something like that? So we're trying to be proactive with it. We're also looking, too, that now we know that our city, situation's fairly stable after an event that was higher than the 2010.
Yeah.
We also are going to be looking to see, are there ways, too, that we might be able to help coordinate more the private response to the sandbagging and potentially even maybe have some resources where we have staff out helping with some of that.
Right. Mm.
The council's policy in the past has prioritized the public first. It's just we have limited people, and so if the flood would have cascaded just a bit higher, we would have had public work staff working around the clock. And so we were cautious to have them getting burned out, helping to do the sandbagging when literally hours later we could have had them, you know, building a dike around the wastewater plant if issues got worse.
And that's the thing. I'm all for putting the public first, but unless it's the wastewater treatment plant is in danger, then we got to, All right. So the next thing you guys talked about was something that a lot of people are really interested in, both good and bad. You guys were reviewing the cannabis-related ordinances and how you're going to handle that in 2025.
Yeah, so the state of Minnesota passed the law, of course, legalizing cannabis, and so they're kind of in the process of making sense of the applications going in to be able to get licensed to do those. Originally, it was supposed to be going into effect the first of the year.
Yep.
So cities like Northfield were scrambling to be like, okay, what's the law say? What regulations do we have? Most of the regulations are at the state level and aren't really granting much local regulatory control. So when the state created the law, the state's handling all of the licensing, managing those licenses, and there's very limited things that we can look at that the communities might do to limit. So it's things like we can limit the number of those that can register for cannabis permits that you have to have at a minimum one per every 12,500 residences. So how the state has interpreted that currently is that would mean Northfield would have to have at least one or two operations in the community. You can't restrict that. Go ahead.
So you would have to allow.
Yes.
We wouldn't mandate that we had a couple of dispensaries.
Right, and I would also say the state is limiting, too, on, especially in the first round, how many they're issuing across the state, because what they don't want to do is have a whole bunch of cannabis stores open, and then all of a sudden private competition happens and a whole bunch close, and it causes a bunch of chaos or problems with enforcement.
Which is exactly what happened with the craft beer industry. I mean,
And they did look at other states, apparently. I wasn't, you know, completely tracking all of the work that they were doing at the state level on this, but that was part of the idea. So even though all of these communities that are of our size or bigger are going to have the ability to have at least one, it doesn't mean that there actually will be one. And depending on your perspective, you might see that as a good thing, or you might see it, if you're a cannabis user, you might see that as this is kind of inconvenient for me to have to go somewhere else. But what the city is going to be wrestling with some of those things. We can have an upper limit put into place, so you can limit beyond that minimum that you could restrict, that you can't have more than that if you want to. So so that's part of what we're looking at. The other thing that the state law outlined is some ability to, locally to put restrictions as it relates to retail businesses from distances of schools, from other retail mm-hmm. businesses. You could limit the distance from one cannabis store to another. And then also residential treatment facilities, which can be challenging locally as we've looked at regulating that, because local residential treatment facilities aren't regulated
right.
locally. So
right.
you can have things like halfway houses and things that are really licensed at the state level, but
yeah.
don't really have any local control. So you might have neighbors that have some kinds of operations that you might not even know
right.
serves as a certain
right.
operation. So that would be hard for us to regulate distances, but you can have a maximum of 1,400 feet restriction from another retail store. And then there's some upward limits of these other types of facilities. So staff's basically working on this. My head's spinning a little bit on all of the language that they're using
yeah.
and the types, because it also gets into things like production
yeah.
of cannabis. It gets into kind of like on the craft where you might have production and some limited retail
right.
and they all have different
right.
terminologies of
right.
it. But
uh-huh.
I would say the short answer of what's going on is staff gave an update. We showed some maps on distance restrictions mm-hmm. to get a sense of where they would go. The idea was they'd go in our retail districts, so either in the downtown or the highway districts.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then these distance requirements, we showed a kind of a map on where at these different distances, where might they be able to go if they do that. So trying to bring the council along with it. It's going to be going to the Planning Commission. The other thing that they're looking at with regulations is Rice County's looking at added restrictions related to tobacco products, suggesting additional restrictions over flavored
mm-hmm.
Products that, you know, many of those are targeted to youth. So
yep.
trying to make it harder to get those types of products to keep it out of the hands of youth related to particularly vaping concerns that we've seen growth in. And so Rice County's ordinance wouldn't force cities mm-hmm. in the county to have to follow their regulations, but they're exploring that. So that's another one that, since Rice County is looking at it,
yeah.
our staff's integrating that for policy discussion to see if Northfield wants to follow suit
sure.
with similar types of restrictions. I would say all of these ordinances we're going to be pushing into the new year. And the reason why is the state now has come out and said, we're not ready to be issuing these licenses like we thought we would be by the first of the year.
Yeah.
So it won't be until at least the second quarter of mm-hmm. next year before they're going to be issuing them, which gives us a little bit more breathing room.
Yeah.
So the council asked that staff make sure to share what we're looking at in the hearing dates for our schools
mm-hmm.
and some of those facilities that relate, so that they can have an opportunity to review and give input.
Mm-hmm.
The Planning Commission will have time, and then our Northfield ASAP group that deals with substance use and trying to discourage abuse of substances or use of controlled substances for those that aren't of legal age, they'll get a chance to weigh in and look at the ordinances too. So give us more time to do more due diligence on it.
Okay. I've got a lot of questions about this, but we're going to...
Jake Riley is your person.
Well, especially as how this relates to what the county is doing also, but we're going to have to save it for another time because... And I'll tell Jake I'm going to give him a call.
That sounds good.
You had a presentation on planning for the North... Oh, yeah, infrastructure for the Northwest area and the commercial development that could be happening out there.
That's right. So we have a lot of activity going on with trying to grow our commercial tax base here in Northfield. So again, Northfield's commercial industrial tax base, industrial in particular, is low comparatively to other communities, which is why our tax rate is higher than mm-hmm. Some communities. So we're continuing to try and find ways to grow our tax base in that we're really out of properties on available to be able to bring in new businesses or grow our existing businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So out west of the hospital, we're in the process of looking at rezoning of some industrial some agricultural property that's in city limits to annex those in. That's going to the Planning Commission this Thursday night. There's a public hearing. One is on a text amendment to that, and another is a rezoning. So if people want to weigh in on that, 6 p.m., that meeting starts. I think there's a couple other hearings first. And then the second item that we have that we're also looking at infrastructure growth. So mm-hmm. we do have existing water and sewer infrastructure to grow business out in that area. If we got into a larger need for more sewer capacity, sanitary sewer, to go back to our wastewater plant. We didn't have a clear plan of how we would get it there. So as an example, if you had a food processing company, they're going to need higher sewer collection because of the production of that. Like a Post is a significant industrial user related to sewer treatment. Mm-hmm. Great business for our community.
Absolutely.
But you need sewer capacity. So we did a study to say, how would we get it there? And we looked at a couple of different routes. One would go replace the existing line past Greenville, which would be very expensive to tear up roads and right-of-way along Lincoln and then out. And then a second option that we looked at, which is the preferred route, would be to go north on Highway 3 over on going west on 320th, following the state and county right-of-ways, and then kind of cutting down through the property gravity to be able to collect back the sewer to a pump station that forces it back to the wastewater plant. So that's the planned route for that to be developed when industry needs it.
Right.
And it's a large price tag to do that. I think it was like $20 million. Yep. But that $20 million doesn't mean the community is paying $20 million. It would mean the businesses that would be benefiting from it would help to pay that back, and then they'll be paying sewer rates for the treatment cost and things after that. But we at least have a plan now. The other one is water, like drinking water that comes out of our faucets. Right now there's water, like out to the hospital, obviously. We can add that, but we do need a larger supply to be able to handle larger businesses potentially like that. So it currently ends off of Highway 19 down by Olaf, and we're looking at an extension that would go west and then up on Eves Avenue, the road that kind of goes up to the hospital, following that right-of-way. And then we had purchased property for a future water tower site just north of the hospital to be able to put a water tower in there. There is added benefit on that water supply that's a little different than the sewer, that the hospital and the future housing development out there would benefit from a redundant water supply, so that we only have one way that water is going to the hospital right now. And if there was ever a problem or repair or that type of a thing, repairs can be managed because you can do kind of temporary construction of rerouting sometimes of lines. But it's very helpful to have a redundant water supply. So in the effect of like an emergency or something, you can have a secondary way to get water there. So that is an added benefit that we are exploring, that we might more proactively look at doing that. We do in a couple of years have a major resurfacing project coming up on Highway 19, and that might be a time to do that. Staff's exploring that, though. It also might be development driven, so we're exploring that as well. But there's a lot of work going that has been going on through the past few years to try and get that area more shovel ready, and also be able to react that if we get a larger business, you don't want to be able to say, well, we don't really know, but let us go study this for 6 months, and then we'll get back to you whether or not we can provide the sewer and how much it's going to cost and the water. And they're like, sorry, we're moving on to the next community, right? Yeah. And that's what we've experienced in some cases. So we're trying to get ourselves more prepared to be able to react so we can have more definitive answers for business to know what we have to do, and then share this with our policymakers so they kind of know what the plan is, so that if and when that happens, there's some background work to start with it.
You've already done the homework.
Exactly.
So you can be prepared and just say, hey, here are our plans already.
Right.
Come on in.
Where are we with that housing development out there, too? I mean, there was a lot of talk about it for a brief moment in time a couple of years ago, and then I've not heard anything since then. What's going on out there?
My understanding is, I'm sure we can get some, you know, some people probably they can get in here to give you more updates, but my understanding is the first phase is planned to start construction next year.
Okay.
I believe the senior living facility that they have has had tremendous interest, and I believe that's well underway with being ready to go as one of the first phases of the project.
That's Gracewind, isn't it?
That's right.
Okay.
That's right.
Okay. That's what. Okay.
There's a marketing page. People can go there. And my understanding is it's been extremely well received, which I think means that's going to start. And then the other housing development that would be kind of a mixed use, it's a combination of townhomes and single family homes and things. Mm-hmm. That one, I think they're also looking at the same phase kicking off. I don't know the status of individual builders, of people's interest to go there, but my understanding is they plan to start construction of the first phase of that subdivision out there next year, too.
That's good news. That's good to hear. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then finally, everyone's favorite topic, you got to the budget last night, too.
Yeah, and catching Logan here, your news director, before the meeting. The meat of our budget discussion, we've got just a couple primary areas that were left to get finalized with the budget. Tax statements, if mm-hmm. people haven't seen, I live in Dakota County. I received mine on Friday. Rice County, I don't think, has quite hit the mailboxes, but they
mine's
probably...
coming next week, yeah.
Okay, I was going to say they're coming very soon, and that mm-hmm. will have a preliminary levy impact to people. So it estimates based on your home value and the proposed taxing jurisdictions of the school, the county, and the city, what the estimated taxes would be. Mm-hmm. The school is pretty well set on that tax statement, and they have their own hearings. The county and the city, though, that's a maximum that can go down. So in Northfield... percentage-wise, we were in the 17% mm-hmm. range and for an increase, and we are down to about 15.8 is really where we're landing.
Okay.
That doesn't mean on an individual home homeowner standpoint that that means that's going to be a percentage increase you mm-hmm. are going to see, because mm-hmm. values of property and thing come into play. So we do anticipate that it's going to be significantly different from on the final on what they look like on the preliminary.
Okay.
Just so we'll have more to come with that next week, but just to give a general sense, the annual increase we're estimating for the typical $350,000 property owner would be on an annual basis about $164. Okay. So that over the entire year. So if they pay $2,250 right now, roughly, on the city's taxes, it would go to $2,414. Okay. That's really getting detailed, but that's what my sheet that I'm looking at says.
I'm trying really hard to divide 16 by 12 in my head, and it's like $11, $12 a month. Yeah,
that's right. So that's probably what you're looking at. We're going to be having hearings in December. If people have questions, that tax statement, if you have a question about the value of your property, that's not what the city handles. You'll have to contact either Dakota or Rice County, depending on where you live. But if you have a question around the spending and the expenses, we have a hearing in December. It says on the statements where the hearings are, how you can go for each jurisdiction. Or you can call our finance director, who fields the calls for people if they want to ask specific questions about their property. So we encourage people to call Brenda Engelstedt, our finance director. But let's get back to the areas we did talk about last night in greater detail, which was the Northfield Community Resource Center is owned by the city of Northfield. It's got a long history of partnerships with the other users in there, Three Rivers, the Community Action Center, HCI's out there, certainly 50 North. The school district used to be out there. They've since left, but the voters had approved that to get constructed as a city building. There were some private dollars that were in the table, and then the city bonded and repaid that debt mm-hmm. as authorized by the voters. That debt's now paid off. The building's getting older, though.
Yep.
Management was, for a period of time, delegated to the actual users of the building, so they kind of created their own cooperative to say, we'll look to see what has to get repaired and fixed and taken care of. We'll finance the improvements that we need to mm-hmm. do. So if I'm replacing carpet in my place, I'll pay 100%. But if it's a roof that needs to get done, we'll figure out the cost, get that improved, and then we'll spread that cost amongst all of the users.
Right.
As the building aged, that group really, I think, realized they weren't in a position of managing the building. They were really about managing their organization. So it was turned back to the city. There was a lot of confusion about what's the cost of things. So I would just say, as Logan was like, it was really complicated. It was really complicated for me, too, because the money wasn't all flowing like through the city. So we didn't have clarity on all of the cost of the stuff. Now we will. We've got a couple years under our belt of managing it. We now clearly understand what the needs are of the building. We're working with the people that are in that building, in the agencies. The city's been taking on some pretty large costs to do some repairs that needed to get done. But I would say what we're trying to figure out now is there's going to need to be some lease rates to catch up with the expenses that we've got. And we're going to be going back to work with our partners out there to say, here's the rates and how might we work together to get this in a direction where it needs to go. So we have good financial clarity now. Now is the kind of working through who pays for what and what's the appropriate allocation. So it's kind of might be a little complicated to explain on the air, but we spent a good, I don't know, it was probably 45 minutes that talked about.
That's what Logan said, yeah. Okay. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I am curious there's no question the NCRC building is an important facility. There are very important organizations that office over there. Does that building pay for itself right now?
Pay for itself, meaning
maintenance versus lease. Lease revenue.
No, okay. The city's been so the debt was paid off in 2016. The main idea at the time was, once the city would basically help with the debt, and then once it was paid off, the users would help cover the operating cost, was the idea, and then the long term kind of maintenance of that. The city, by being owners, actually makes it lower cost to the users than being in the private realm and having a private owner, or would be expected to be lower, because we don't build in profit or any of those extra types of things.
Right.
Sometimes when private owns too, they might not be making much while they're owning and operating it, but they make it on the sale on the back end.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the city has no intention of selling it. If if one of the users wanted to buy it and keep it going, you know, as a collective or collaborative, that we'd probably be open to that. But there is an interest there, at least at this point. So the idea is, we're there to kind of make sure that these organizations can be successful, but we want them to cover the cost. Even at the rates that we're proposing to go to next year, we're still going to be about $8 a square foot lower than what the private lease rates are if they were out on the private market here in Northfield. So, but it's still a big increase that we're looking at. So we want to work with them on that. And it's late in the year. Mm-hmm. Our leases are about to expire. So we're going to be having conversations with them about, like, how do we get there?
Yeah.
What's the affordability to start to phase this in and get to that point? We actually... it's its own kind of fund. It's its own kind of checkbook on how it works from a city account standpoint. Mm-hmm. In our checkbook, we've been spending money down on that balance in our checkbook to the point where we don't really have any money left in the city's checkbook in that particular fund to continue to do these improvements. So we're going to not only need to increase some of the rates to get the costs covered, the city's going to need to build that fund back up as well. So. Yeah. We've got about 1.5% levy increase that's part of this levy that we're doing to help rebuild that fund, so that we've got cash there, so that if we have some expected repair, like a furnace fails, we have cash to go to pay for it, and then later go back to our tenants to say, okay, you're going to now help pay for this over time in the next lease, right? So... Mm-hmm. It's all starting to get to the point. It's been a lot of energy. I would say that this is the one area when I came into the city that needed some attention where it was unclear. Otherwise, most of the operations of the city are pretty transparent and simple. Mind. not a lot of things to figure out, I guess, generally on the finances. They are kind of what they are, and you want to do best practices. This was an area where it just drove me crazy because I couldn't even answer some of the questions of what the costs were. I mean, things were getting taken care of, you know, the things were getting done, but the bigger picture of longer-term financial responsibility and stewardship, I felt, wasn't quite there. So we've really been working hard to work with our partners out there to have us take on back of the management, get a plan together. We've now developed a 5-year improvement plan, so we're also looking to say what needs to get done in this building to kind of do a refresh on the HVAC system, on some of these other things, so that we have a 5-year, a 10-year plan in place going forward, so we don't experience this again.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay, Ben, we have kept you way too long today. So I do appreciate the time, though, and it's always good to talk to you.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, Ryan. Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, of course. Thanks. Okay.